Welcome to Parents Perspective. 15-year-old Carla was despondent. She couldn't concentrate in any of her classes. Even at lunch, she began to sit by herself and pick at her food. Her friends, Kathy and Susan, finally went to Mrs. Davis. "There's something wrong with Carla," they announced. "Do you think you could get her to see Jeremy?" "That sounds like a wise idea," Mrs. Davis responded. "I'll have a talk with Carla and see whether she agrees." No, Jeremy was not Carla's boyfriend. Jeremy was one of her classmates and a peer counselor. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about peer counseling? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, our guest who teaches students peer counseling will help us understand both the process and the outcome. Sandra Mulharen is a licensed clinical social worker who specializes in work with children and adolescents. She teaches peer counseling, and currently, she is a middle school counselor. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Sandra.
Thank you for having me here today.
What is peer counseling, Sandra?
Peer counseling is a program that's set up in many schools or maybe even in some of the communities that trains high school students to be counselors, meaning that they counsel their peers with problems that they may be facing socially, academically, within their family, regarding relationship issues.
Why use peers as counselors rather than adults? You would think if a kid had a problem that they should go and see an adult. You know, adults know more. What's the purpose of them seeing a peer?
Okay. Well, usually teenagers tend to go to their friends with their problems rather than an adult or a parent or a teacher. And teens are pretty smart, and they can usually relate more appropriately or at that moment of what's going on in regards to a problem that the teen might be facing at that time. So we're able to touch more teens that are struggling with needs by using peer counselors than we would be not having peer counselors available to teens in high school setting.
Are you saying that most teens are more receptive, they're more comfortable with people their own age?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And usually they feel more comfortable going to the teens, like you said, as well as if you think about it, usually when you're going to a parent with a problem, they're seeking some type of advice in regards to some type of solution. And these teens, a lot of times what you see is they're just struggling with something in regards to, can be anything from friendships, from pressure with high school or peer pressure or family concerns. So they're more likely to go to their peers rather than a parent. Also, one of the other things, maybe they may not go to a parent because they have a fear of maybe disappointing a parent in regards to they might be struggling with something and feel like they might be a disappointment to a parent.
So the idea is that a peer is less likely to be judgmental and more likely to just sort of listen and reflect back than a grown-up who might have some judgments on what's going on.
Right, exactly. And also a peer is probably more likely than a grown-up at that moment to be experiencing something similar or had experienced something similar.
Mm. Kids don't want lectures, do they?
No.
How do teens become peer counselors?
The peer counseling training program that I have co-led, it's set up that usually the school counselor or someone from the school will refer a student. And we, in this particular training program, we accept sophomore, juniors, and seniors into the program. And usually these are students that are referred, and they're referred because the counselor at the school or another school administrator feel like they're responsible, mature individuals who have showed some leadership skills already and who could handle certain situations that might arise as far as problematic situations. And they find also that these are the students that other students are coming to with their problems. I've also had some parents refer their own children. They've heard of the program out in the area, and they've said, "I think my daughter would be wonderful at that, or my son would be wonderful at that," and they have referred them. And, of course, I talk to the parents, and I listen to why they think their child might be appropriate. And then I have the students, you know, their child fill out an application form why they would want to be a peer counselor, and then we set up an interview to talk to them and make sure that they're appropriate for the program. It is somewhat of an intensive program. It requires a lot of hours. The program that I've led is usually almost up to 20 hours
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. Yeah, especially when high school students have a lot of academics, you know, as far as homework, and then they have a lot of after-school activities. And this training program that I have led is usually after school. So it's really a dedication on their part. But the feedback I've had from the peers who have gone through it has been that it's been a rewarding experience and such a valuable learning experience as well.
I just have a question about when parents refer children to possibly become peer counselors. Do you tell the kids, oh, your mother suggested that you might like to do this? Or do you just say, maybe you'd like to do this. Would you like to fill out an application? I'm just curious about how kids react to parents being involved.
Well, usually the process that I've experienced has been that the parent has called me about the program to learn a little bit more information about the program. And then I've told them to have their child call me about it. And usually the children are extremely, you know, enthusiastic about it. Usually parents, as we all know, have a very good perspective on their child and also know what their child's interests might be and that this would be something that would have interested them. You know, the parents have said to me, my daughter would be wonderful at this. I hear her on the phone at night with her friends, you know, talking about their problems all the time. And it would be so nice for her to have some real proper training in how to deal with these problems that her friends are coming to her with.
What kinds of issues does the program cover?
A large part of the program is just teaching the students the skills, the peer counseling skills. And what I mean by the skills is listening skills are a very large part of it all. We teach them how to be active listeners. And as far as active listening, the peer counselors are only supposed to be doing 20% of the talking, whereas the peer with the problem is usually doing 80% of the talking. So you want to get the person with the problem to really tell their story, to get out their emotions, how they're feeling about this. And then the peer counselor tries to help them with kind of problem solving. What are some possible solutions? However, the peer counselor, it's very important that they understand they are not the ones to give the answer, the solution. They're to help, you know, assist the peer with problem solving, because it's a lot more effective for the peer with the problem to come up with their own solution rather than for someone else to tell them what to do.
What kinds of tools do you train them to use to help the peers?
They learn the skills through a lot of role-playing. We use a lot of role-playing with them. Not only do we teach them like the listening skills as far as what I was saying before with the body language and just the nods and certain key words maybe to say and open-ended questions rather than close-ended, we also do some peer education with them, meaning that we cover specific teen issues that they may be faced with, that someone might come to them with. For instance, we go over maybe problems within the family, substance abuse issues, depression, suicide, eating disorders, sort of the whole gamut that teens are kind of faced with, you know, nowadays. And so we educate them in regards to signs and symptoms maybe to look for. We give them certain situations that they might be faced with, and we have them role play it out and you know, and process it and see what was, you know, what they came up with and what was the best possible solution, how it went.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Sandra Mulhern about peer counseling. Can you give an example of something that's happened where you could really see that the training worked?
Well, in one of the training programs, we were almost finished with it, and I had two young ladies who I believe were sophomores in high school approached me, and they said they were very concerned about a friend of theirs who they felt had an eating disorder. And they said after they had gone through the peer counseling training session on specifically eating disorders, we were teaching them about signs and symptoms of eating disorders and kind of how to intervene. These two students came up to me and said, you know, we think we have a friend with an eating disorder. She's really become very thin. She doesn't sit with us at lunch. She has been isolating herself. She's not participating in activities that she used to. We're really concerned about this. You know, what do you think we should do? So after speaking with them a while and different strategies on how to approach this girl to begin with and how to talk about this, they were able then to kind of support one another and go to this young girl. It took a few times, not just one time, but a few times, and to talk to her and get her to sort of open up about her feelings of struggles that she was dealing with right now. It happened that there were some family issues that were going on, and the two peer counselors supported this student in helping her go speak with her parents about the situation that she was kind of feeling bad about, and they then got her the proper help.
But it was there was an eating disorder?
Yes,
involved.
There was an eating disorder That's involved, right. And then she went ahead and got some professional help.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So kids can do this in twos. It doesn't have to be one-on-one.
Right. A lot of times it is done in pairs, or a lot of times you'll see that a student may come up to a peer counselor who's been trained, and they know that this is a person who's been in training, and you know, speak to them about a certain situation that they're dealing with. And then the peer counselor, we've told them, is perfectly fine as long as you keep confidentiality, you know, that it's fine to go to your other peer counselors and talk about the certain situation that the peer with the problem, you know, brought to you, the problem situation, if you're struggling with that. And, you know, as long as you remain, you know, keep confidentiality, that you can support one another, because they shouldn't try to, you know, we kind of try to reinforce, don't try to take this all on by yourself, because it's a lot to put on these teens' shoulders, you know, these peer counselors' shoulders, because they deal with some very difficult issues.
Does all peer counseling only take place at school? We've heard a lot about connection with school. Does it take place outside of mm-hmm. school?
When you speak with peer counselors, they'll say that majority of the time, they do most of their peer counseling outside of school, whether it's during, you know, a sports game or some type of activity, or during practice, or on the weekends, especially when they're out socially. So it's not necessarily just a real formal, you know, you set up an appointment and go see a peer counselor. It really takes place very informally most of the time. And the peer counselors, like I was saying before, we've trained them. We've given them a lot of peer education on like signs and symptoms to look for in regards to certain teen issues. And so therefore, a lot of times the peer counselors on the weekends or outside of school are able to kind of pick up, well, you know, that person's looking kind of down today, or I noticed that at the, you know, the out at a party or something, that he had, you know, seemed to be drinking way too much, you know, and then they'll approach the student in regards to that.
What kinds of situations are really not appropriate for peers to counsel each other?
Mm-hmm. We are very clear in the training program with the students that they will probably, maybe at some point, be confronted with a situation in regards to safety, as far as if it's an unsafe situation that one of the students is struggling with, meaning if a student is significantly depressed and is feeling suicidal, or has also experienced some type of abuse or neglect, or is experiencing at the time, that those are situations where they must break confidentiality. We make it very clear to them that in situations where it's potential harmful to the peer, that they must go and tell a responsible adult that, you know, this person has had some suicidal thoughts, or this person has a plan, or this person is very, very significantly depressed. I'm very concerned. And that's when they really do need to seek adult, you know, support and supervision in regards to that. So specifically in regards to unsafe situations, when it's any type of potential safety issues,
then what happens? Adults take over, and
depending on the situation, depending on how, you know, at risk that the child is at that moment, the adults may immediately intervene, or the adults may continue to assist the peer counselor on ways to counsel this child. But of course, if it's any type of matter in regards to suicide, then the adults would intervene. Mm. You know,
how do responsible adults know whether the system is working? Is there some kind of an oversight method, or do the peer counselors come and sit down and talk to the counselor who's working in the school, or how does that work?
Most of the peer counseling programs in schools have a once-a-week time that they meet together, and that's when they kind of check in, and that's usually there's an advisor who's on the school staff whether it is the school counselor or some other school personnel who oversees the peer counseling program. And that's when they kind of check in and see what the problems are that the counselors are being, you know, the peer counselors are being are dealt with at that time during school, during the, that week. So that's kind of seeing how it's monitored somewhat. You know, there's usually a faculty advisor who monitors the program and checks in weekly with the peer counselors.
Is this used as a sort of a debriefing time for the peer counselors? They get to tell what they've been dealing with and whether they've had any struggles themselves?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the peer counselors support one another in regards to usually at these meetings, they'll say, well, I'm dealing with, you know, so-and-so coming to me and saying that their parents are putting all this pressure on them to get straight A's, you know. And then another peer counselor maybe dealt with the same situation last year with the students. So they give each other advice on how to handle that. The other thing, too, is in most schools, the advisor usually will set up some type of ongoing training, too, with them, where they will continue to have ongoing educating the counselors, the peer counselors at these meetings about specific topics that might be coming up, or update them on latest trends, things like that.
When you're dealing with young people, it seems that it would be hard for them to learn some of the principles that we think would be needed for peer counseling, like ignoring their own personal biases or being able to keep things confidential when they're supposed to. Mm-hmm. Does it turn out that that's difficult to teach them?
I think that is the most difficult thing to teach the peer counselors, is how to put their personal biases aside, and also in regards to keeping confidentiality. We really define the difference between speaking to someone as a friend and speaking to someone as a peer counselor. There's a big difference. As a friend, you're more likely to have equal time talking, and you're more likely to give that person advice on what to do and jump to the advice right away. As a peer counselor, we train them in regards to the active listening, where you're not doing all the talking. You're letting the peer do all the talking. You're listening. You're trying to get them to get out their story, get out the problem that they're struggling with, get out their emotions about how they're feeling about it, and then helping them with brainstorming some possible solutions so you're not giving, you know, your advice. I think what I've heard from the students who have gone through the peer counseling training program is that is one of the most difficult things to do, is to put aside that friend role and not giving suggestions of what they would do in that situation and saying to the peer who has the problem, well, you know what? I'm not quite sure what we should do at this moment. Why don't we explore some things together? And some of them will even say, well, my friends have said to me, okay, I don't want the peer counselor. I want the friend now.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Sandra Mulharen about peer counseling.
Have you had any problems with breaches of confidentiality or some issues that have come up that you don't feel have been handled right?
In the training program that I lead, we have the student sign off on some rules, and the rules include the confidentiality statement in regards to that they must uphold confidentiality unless it's happens to be potentially dangerous to the person that they're peer counseling or to other people, you know, as well.
Isn't that significant when children and grown-ups sign a piece of paper? It's so significant. It's so official. Mm-hmm. We've seen that in situations where parents and kids are going to make some rules and they're going to go by these rules and so forth, and this, you know, and when there are problems, and when they sign a paper, it's so much more binding.
Right.
It's very interesting.
It's much more powerful to them. And the students who are going through the peer counseling training program, remember, they do go through an application process. They are interviewed to make sure that they're appropriate, you know, for the program. So most of the students who are going through it are very responsible and mature for their age, you know, adults. So I have not run into the problem in regards to them having difficulty with confidentiality issues.
Have you had any situations where a peer counselor really didn't know whether to handle this on his or her own or come to an adult? How does that work out?
Several times. And one time in particular, I do remember where a peer counselor had just completed the training program. And I believe it was the last day of the training program, and we were having a little graduation celebration. She came to me at the end of the class and said, you know, I'm not quite sure how I should handle the situation and whether I should get you involved in it or not because of confidentiality reasons with a friend of mine. And I said, well, you know, one of the things that we can do is you don't need to tell me the student's name right now. Let's just talk about what the situation is, and we can figure out what would be the best options for your friend who's having this problem and whether you do need to break confidentiality or not. You know, so she talked to me about how her friend was having some family problems. His parents were going through a divorce. There was a lot of arguing going on at home. So home wasn't a very pleasant place for him to be at that time. So he was starting to avoid home a lot, meaning that he was staying after school very late. He was actually sleeping in his car and telling his parents that he was spending the night at friends' homes. He had also, in addition to just the family problems that were going on, he had just found out that he had not been accepted to his first choice of college, which was a huge disappointment for him, as well as he was very concerned about how his parents were going to react to that, you know, because his parents, there were so many problems going on in the family. He was, you know, wanting to give his parents something happy to look forward to. So she was describing him, and he sounded very depressed to me, and she said that he had also been drinking more and going out and doing some risk-taking behaviors, you know. So she said that he was closed up. He shared a little bit with her, but otherwise he wouldn't listen to any type of advice that she was giving him. And I asked her if she had talked to him, mentioned, has he thought about, you know, hurting himself? And she said she had not. She had not mentioned that yet to him. So we talked about the importance of really kind of assessing how depressed this young man was. So at that point, it happened that she was seeing him later on that evening, and she went and met with him. And after talking with him for a while, she did ask the question, you know, have you heard or thought about hurting yourself? And he had said yes. And from then, at that point, she talked about how concerned she was, and she used her peer counseling skills that she learned in the training program in regards to how to intervene when someone tells you that they're potentially suicidal. And she wanted to make sure she didn't leave him alone, and she had called me on the phone. And then I helped her with speaking with him and how to get the school counselor involved as well. And to make a long story short, we were able to get the school counselor involved. The student felt comfortable with that, and the school counselor helped the student, as well as the peer counselor, go and speak to the parents. They all went and spoke to the student's parents together, and he was able to get the appropriate help that he needed. But that is an example, whereas, you know, sometimes peer counselors aren't sure regards to the confidentiality issues and whether they should break it or not. And this, you know, peer counselor, she knew at the time when someone makes a suicidal statement that she does need to break it. So I think this peer counselor, I think she really saved this young boy's life. Yeah, so it's very remarkable.
That's very dramatic, mm-hmm. but it does mm-hmm. show the significance of these kinds of programs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sandra, how can our listeners get more information about peer counseling?
Well, I would have your listeners, first of all, go to their schools. And I'm speaking specifically in regards to high schools. Most high schools in the area have usually a peer counseling program that is going on. Or there's other community organizations, like, for instance, the Jewish Social Services, which I was a part of, runs a training program that is a free training program to local high school students. So sometimes community agencies run them as well. Or otherwise, on the web, there's a wealth of information. I was just looking on it myself. Mm-hmm. If they're able to go under peer counseling in high school, a number of websites will pop up. One in particular that I was looking at is called advocatesforyouth.org, and that has a number of listings and information on how to get peer counseling programs started.
Can you say that name again, so in case people are trying to write it down real fast?
Sure. It's advocatesforyouth.org.
Our thanks to Sandra Mulhern for information about these wonderful skills available for young people to learn and to use throughout their lives. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573, and let us know what station you're listening to. We'd like to send you Parents as Mentors. Parents as Mentors is available at all major bookstores and on the web. For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, just send a $5 check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. That's P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
You can reach Parents Perspective through your local station, of course, or you can call our toll-free number, 1-800-791-8573. You can also email us at parentsper@aol.com. That's parentsper@aol.com. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website. It's a shortcut address, http://i.am/parentsperspective, all one word, http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.